Accession number 26580.
Wing Commander Roberts, Real 3. We're talking about the typical sort of bombing raid, you know, that that you were on. And we talked about, you talked about a couple of times about the bombing. What was your overall accuracy like, do you think? Would you hit the target or get near the target? I mean,
I doubt if we ever met, got to the target.
Why? Just visibility problems.
Well, visibility and navigation, yes.
And did you have any qualms about landing on civilian areas? I'm not being, trying to be controversial here. I'm just asking what you felt about it. I mean, were you aware of what you were bombing?
No.
And sort of
no.
Did it just not occur to you, or were you not bothered either way?
Well, whether it occurred to me or not, it was none of my business. You know, the government had a policy of conducting war, and there it was.
Now, on the way back, was it any different? You know,
back from
the raid.
No, I don't think so. On one occasion, there were balloon barrages.
Tell me about them.
Well, there were balloon barrages around Hull and other ports to deter German bombers.
So balloons with steel cables hanging between them.
Oh yes, and that's one reason why the slats on the hamblers were screwed down and balloon cutters. In the hope that if you came across a balloon cable, the cutter would cut it, and you'd escape instead of being pulled down to the ground. Now, one occasion something must have gone wrong with the navigation, and these balloon barrages produced an electronic signal, which something like that. And it happened to me one night, and I realised we were going into the Hull balloon barrage, so we turned around and went out to sea again, and went further down the coast before we went inland.
And when you landed, what about the debriefing process? How rigorous was it?
Well, I don't know that I can answer that, really. The interrogator and the crew did their best to describe what had happened, but rigor is a word I wouldn't use, I don't think. I mean, everyone doing their best to say what exactly had happened.
Now, are there any other missions you may remember in particular of this period?
Well, I think my last trip, time was going on and Bomber Command was developing, the German defences were developing, and before you got into Germany, there was a great belt of searchlights, which I suppose were intended to help the night fighters and what have you. And Bomber Command developed a policy where they sent several aircraft to go into Holland at low level to beat up the searchlights if possible. And I did one trip, which I think we shut one searchlight down, but whether by offensive action or fright, I don't know. But on that occasion, we came back out. This was at low level, of course. And we came back over, I think, Oymoiden, and got into some light anti-aircraft fire. So I had coloured balls coming up at me from all directions. Fortunately, nothing hit me. So, you know, I had a very fortunate 30 trips.
Now, one thing that I mean, I quite see from your notes that you have that you don't remember many of the trips. But one thing you do say is there was a sort of landmark point of the seventh sortie, which you seem to comment on quite a bit, that people either succumbed round about then or the how much was that really present in your minds?
Well, I think it was something one vaguely thought about. It seemed to apply. Whether it was just a matter of luck that some people disappeared at that and not at others, I can't recall.
What was your
But I mean, the tension increased, of course, as you got to 30 trips, because, you know, having escaped so far, how much more are you going to escape?
How bad was it? I mean, how did it affect your nerve?
Don't think it did.
So it was just a feeling of tenseness, but it didn't affect your performance?
No.
So what happened at the end? Before we go to that, what about when you weren't on the raids? What was the sort of social life like on the squadron? People often talk about bomber crews and things. How did you live your lives when you were on the ground?
I don't recall anything special, anything unusual.
Did you drink?
Oh yes, pints of beer certainly. I became a cardinal at Cottesmore.
What does that mean?
Well, if you don't, I can't go through. I can't describe in words what being a cardinal does. But you have to drink. While you drink a pint, you have to perform certain things, you know. And it's easy enough to go wrong. And if you go wrong, you start with another pint. But I became a cardinal there.
So you were drinking. Were you drinking more as a result, perhaps, of the stress? Or is that just over-exaggerated? Were you just enjoying a drink?
Just enjoying a drink, I think, is the proper way to describe it. Particularly in the sergeant's mess, where, you know, one have sandwiches at about 9 o'clock at night.
What was the sergeant's mess like? What did it offer you? A young man.
Oh, well, of course, it had accommodation. in fact, Coningsby, we were put out to rest in a little place called New York, billeted on individual families. I don't know. That's probably because accommodation was overstretched on the station. I don't know whether it had anything to do with security. In other words, keeping people away in case the station was bombed. Perhaps, I don't know.
And was the station ever bombed?
Not to my knowledge.
Just any other recollections or incidents?
Yes, I remember another occasion where I might have been responsible for a very bad crash. I was rather keen on the Lorenz beam, which the aircraft was fitted with, and on one night coming back to Coningsby, I picked up the beam and did a practiced approach down to 1,000 feet instead of course it would have been down to the ground, down to 1,000 feet, went across the airfield, and out of the corner of my eye I glimpsed in a quarter moon a flash which said Hamblin cockpit to me, and I hauled the stick right back in my tummy, and we went up at a remarkable rate. But the other aircraft captain said that he heard my engines go over the top of him. Of course, he was in the circuit, having been cleared down to land.
What exactly was the Lorenz beam? I've not heard of that.
Well, it was a radio beam which. A very narrow radio beam, which on one side said da da da, and on the other side dit dit dit. And when you were in the middle, it was a da. It was a blind landing aid.
And you had another near accident as well. I think that's probably the final story from.
What was that? What's the other one? Yes, another foolish act. On my final trip, when returning to Coningsby. It was a full moon, beautiful weather, but dark, and I beat up the station, which I suppose I shouldn't have done, did a quick run round the circuit, and came into land somewhat before the flare path, only to discover that I was on the wrong end of the flare path, going downwind, and came close to meeting a lorry coming towards me. So one lives and hopes.
So what happened next then? You'd finished your first tour of duty. This would be, it looks like, December 41.
That's right, December 41. And what normally happened was that people from who'd been bombing in Bomber Command went back to an OTU to act as an instructor. the casualty rates on OTUs were quite high. In fact, on my course of 17 when I was at Cottesmore, there we killed 3 people. And if you're going to be an instructor, I thought, well, why should you not be a qualified instructor? So, rather to my surprise, I was let to go and do a flying instructor's course, where I had the misfortune to have as an instructor a pre-war, rather hardened chap, who took an instant dislike to me, and I had to change instructors.
Now, why did he take a dislike to you?
Why what?
Why did he take a dislike to you?
Oh, I don't know. Some people take dislikes to other people for no possible reason. Oh, I think perhaps he did a roll in a tutor with me in the back, and I said, was that a slow roll, sir, or a barrel roll? And I think he was so upset by that that... But I didn't know. It was a sensible question.
Did you get on better with the next instructor, I presume?
I had no other trouble, no.
You were going to, is it number one flying instruction school or flying?
That was the one. That's where we are at the moment. Church Lawford.
Yeah, there seems to be a bit confusion because in your thing it says number one FIS and in the other one it says number two Central Flying School. Both at Central.
Yeah, I think the name was changed probably while I was there or while I was in transit to it.
So.
It's the same place, Church Lawford.
And that's near Rugby, yes, that's Australia.
That's right, yeah.
Anything else about that?
No. Oh, I got my DFM when I was there.
Now tell me about that, because that's quite... How did you come to get it? What was the boat?
Now, I can't tell you the policy of issuing awards. I don't know. How far my squadron commander, who put these names forward, was advised by a policy or acted entirely on his own initiative, I wouldn't know. But the citation which I have was entirely standard. Entirely standard.
Nothing. What did it refer to?
Well, it was entirely standard, you know, application, words, I don't know. I can't even go and put my hands on it. Not for doing anything in particular at all.
It was for carrying out your duties.
That's right.
In the correct manner.
And I suppose that perhaps I impressed somebody with doing them just that little bit better than somebody. But
what proportion would get medals?
You are. I've just talked about a possible policy. I don't know. It may be, for all I know, that squadron commanders were told to decorate 1 in 10 or 1 in 50 or what. I have no idea.
We only ever ask you questions you might know. Well, did the other members of your crew or anyone else you know have a DFM?
Not that I can recall, no. Oh, well, there were three WAP AGs on the squadron who had DFM and bars. But, I mean, they've been doing it for some time.
So, anything else about your time at Church Lawford?
Not that I recall, no.
Okay. Now, your next posting was to number 12 pilot. AFU.
Advanced Flying Unit.
Now, what exactly was this? This was quite new, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know about new. I don't know how long they've been in existence, but the AFUs were set up to take pilots who were trained overseas in the Empire Training Scheme to familiarise themselves again with flying and flying in this country. I can't remember how long the course was. But, I mean, they're all trained pilots. It was just a matter of getting refreshed and used to particularly the weather in this country.
Now, you were an instructor.
Yes. Oh, well, I was a qualified instructor, yes.
And what did you think of the competence of these lads that were coming in from the colonies?
I don't recall ever having any real trouble. No, don't recall.
So they
all got wings. They all got
wings. They trained well.
Yes.
And the other thing that happened there was that I think you were commissioned then as well.
I was commissioned at Grantham, having been interviewed by my station commander at Coningsby, And nothing really came of that, so I had to start again. I was told that the papers had disappeared, but whether there were any papers ever in the first place, I wouldn't know. But anyway, I succeeded the second time. And then, of course, I might very well shortly have been in the infantry.
Well, did the commission make a lot? I'll come back. Well, did the commission make much difference to your life? I mean, you've been a sergeant. You were in flying instructor as a sergeant. You were presumably a flying instructor as an officer. Did it make much difference to your actual life?
Well, I think one was aware of being up in the social scale, moved up in the social scale. Life was rather more comfortable.
What was the officer's mess like? Give us an idea of what.
Grantham, of course, was a peacetime station way back, but. No, I can't recall now. I don't have a visual memory of it.
But do you remember what an officer's mess offered you as a? What would you do in there? Was it just a drinking club, or was it where you lived? Did it offer?
Well, you lived there. I suppose like living in a club.
Did you enjoy the atmosphere?
Yes.
Was heavy drinking common in the RAF at the time, or was it social drinking?
Well, I think mostly social drinking, but of course there were occasions when there was some very heavy drinking, particularly after guest nights.
Anything else while you were at Grantham?
Well, I was sent on a blind flying course at Watchfield. I can't remember if it was a week or 2 weeks, but I got an exceptional assessment there, which is rather nice. But following on that, as it happened later on, I was sent back to Coningsby, which had a BA training flight as an instructor there. But that didn't last long for another reason. But another matter at Grantham, which nearly finished my career forever, was that I came close to a court-martial for low-flying. And in fact, the low flying I had done, there was no doubt about that at all, as I flew over an armaments factory where my girlfriend worked in the laboratory. But unfortunately for me, at that time, the boss of the factory and some local or some visiting dignitaries who'd been just opening a new section saw me, got my number, and the next day or 2 days later, I was under close arrest. But I was very fortunate in that the man who was told, given the job of a court of inquiry into the case, was, I think, a pre-war warrant officer who got to be a flight lieutenant, and a very nice chap indeed. And I think he so arranged witnesses that what they said coincided with the weather as it happened, because the clouds were only 500 feet on that particular day, and I got away with it. But that was very, very fortunate, that was.
Now, the next thing was this, you went to back to Coningsby, it looks like.
That's right, but I was...
This is in September 42, just for a couple of months. And this is this business about blind flying. Now, what exactly were you doing?
Well, we're teaching pilots blind flying on the Lorenz beam. If you remember, we talked about that a little while ago. Not a job I particularly wanted to do, but there we are. One is given a job, but. It came to an end very shortly, simply because I was hauled back into Bomber Command.
Now, what was that? When you say hauled back, were you not expecting it?
I had hoped it wouldn't happen. You know, if one puts one's life on the line, having done so, then one hopes one doesn't have to do it again. And so I was hauled back into Bomber Command and posted to... a new airfield just north of Gainsborough, whose name I can't recall, to number 199 squadron. When I got there, there was no squadron. And after I'd been there for a few days, a wing commander turned up in a Humber brake, who said he was the CO of 199 Squadron, which was then to be formed. But a few more days later, I was posted again to Kirmington in North Lincolnshire to 150 Squadron on Wellington 3s. Now, Wellington 1Cs and Wellington 3s were two quite different animals, because the Wellington 1C had fairly weakish engines and the 3 had Hercules engines, rather more powerful aircraft altogether.
What did you think of the Wellington? I mean, we haven't really described touched on the Wellington before.
I was just describing that the Wellington 3 was a very nice aeroplane. Not as nice as a Hampden to fly, but a very nice aeroplane. And of course,
was it better as a bomber? It had a slightly better reputation, but...
Well, I think there were always many more Wellingtons than Hamdens, and it had a bigger bomb load. But that, of course, was later fitted with more navigation aids, I think, later on, which helped things a lot.
Now, how did you fit into your new squadron?
Well, I don't know. No problems. We were only there for a short while anyway. I did a couple of mining trips, I think. I can't remember any bombing trips. A couple of mining trips. Before, we got up one morning and the airfield, going down the airfield, they were all new aircraft, desert camouflage. So we were new, and we got officer's camp kit. So we knew we were going somewhere. And nobody told us where we were going, except we went down to Portreath in Cornwall, and we were there for a few days because the weather was frightful. And then we were sent off to Gibraltar.
And how did you get out there? By ship?
No, we flew the aircraft.
You flew your own aircraft?
Yeah, 150 Squadron. They all flew out to Gibraltar. Now, the airfield at Gibraltar was absolutely crammed, because we're talking now about the torch landings in French North Africa.
That's what you were getting ready for.
That's right. Well, that's what we were moving towards. But when I was off Cape St. Vincent, the bottom edge of Portugal, my starboard engine stopped. And I hadn't been to an OTU on Wellington, so I didn't know too much about the system. But I knew there was a cock called balance cock B, where you could transfer from one wing to the other. So we turned that one on, and the engine went again. And when we got to Gibraltar, the airfield there was absolutely chock-a-block. And so the instructions were that you flew all the way around the rock, first of all, got permission to land. And so we flew south around the rock, round and back up, and halfway up the northern thing, which is sort of crosswind, my port engine stopped. So there's no time to think about what was wrong or what to do anything. So I feathered the engine and went into land on one engine, except insofar as a fortress came in straight from the Mediterranean, and instead of doing a circuit of the rock as instructions, he landed. So when I came down on my one engine to 300 feet, he was still on the runway. So I had to do an overshoot, which got me down amongst the masts, or close to the masts of the ships at the other end of the runway. But anyway, being a Wellington 3 with Hercules engines, we kept going, gradually climbed round, and went in and did a one-engine landing, which some people rushed up and shook me by the hand. But, next morning, there was nothing wrong with the engine.
An intermittent fault.
Well, we'll come to it in due course. So anyway, the propeller was unfeathered, the aircraft was refueled, and we went off to an airfield near Algiers. going into, of course, knowing not what we were going into, and since we got camp kit, you know, we've been thinking about living in tents in the desert. But when we got to Bleda,
that was where you were going.
Yes, that was about 40 miles southwest of Algiers. We got to Bleda. That was a French Air Force station, and we were billeted in French married officers' quarters. With a chain that pulled, a long way from tents in the desert. Marvellous. However, there'd been a lot of flying around the airfield before we arrived, and a bit of rain and it was very muddy. And my squadron commander slid off the edge of the runway of the airfield, and so upset his ankle or something that he was sent home. And he'd only been acting squadron commander for hardly a month, I think, because his predecessor was sacked overnight because of some dirty dealings by the squadron.
Right, so what happened next then?
Well, we started operating, I think. This was just before Christmas. And we started operating, and in the space up to the beginning of May, I think, I did 30 trips, or thereabouts, 30 trips, sometimes flying two or three nights in a row.
And where were you operating against?
We were operating to bomb Bizerta and Tunis, occasionally to Sicily, Palermo, and once or twice to Sardinia, but mostly to Bizerta, where we concentrated raids into 5 minutes, as home policy was. You know, they did their best to reduce the time over target for so many aircraft. In order to confuse the defences, but in fact, around Bizerta and everything, there were hardly any defences at all.
So you found it easier than you found the
Germans? Oh, yes, I mean, there were no opposition at all, except on one occasion when I was above cloud and I was fired on by HMS Arethusa. I think there was a night fighter on one occasion, but there was very little flak. And in fact, we used to see you could start over the sea and go into the land, so there was no flak over the sea going to land. We used to bomb at 6,000 feet, which unheard of in Europe,